I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Since before Missouri voted to legalize medical marijuana, CBD shops have been sprouting up all over the Kansas City area. But what is CBD, and does it really have the medicinal benefits that people claim? Today, a conversation about the CBD industry. We'll find out how people are using this cannabis compound and see what rules are in place to make sure it's safe. Then, the untold story of a conspiracy that took place during the most critical period of our nation's birth. We'll learn about the plot to kill the man who would become the country's first president. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. We're going to talk about the CBD industry this morning, so let's begin with a basic definition. CBD is a cannabis compound that its advocates say carries with it significant medical benefits, but it doesn't make people feel stoned. The market for CBD is exploding around the country, and even right here in Kansas City. Users claim it does all sorts of things, like healing wounds and eliminating pain. They say it helps with anxiety and that it even helps cure cancer and Alzheimer's. Scientists, though, say, hold on, there's proof of hardly anything here. They warn consumers to go slow. Because it's such a new industry, there's little regulation over the CBD products appearing on the market. That means no one is watching to make sure those products are what they claim to be. Now a conversation about the CBD industry, which is fast emerging as the wild, wild west of the medical world. With us, Eric Oligschlager is here. He's the CEO of the Hemp Hoss on 39th Street in Kansas City. Nice to have you, Eric. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very much for having me on.
And joining us via Skype from Greeley, Colorado, is Esther Honig. She's a reporter for Harvest Public Media, who once worked here at KCUR. Esther, nice to have you back again.
Thank you, Steve, for having me.
Esther, what's going on out there? Just how hot is the CBD industry right now?
So industrial hemp has just moved from the DEA to the USDA. And by that, I mean that it used to be a Schedule I drug, and now it's more like other agricultural commodities, so things like corn and soybean. And that is all thanks to the Farm Bill, which was just passed in the final days of 2018. And that bill was really careful to include extracts like CBD in the definition of industrial hemp. And that's really setting up the market for CBD, which right now, you know, as you mentioned, it's being sold as a health supplement, and it's being added into everything from like sports drinks to pet treats. In fact, there was a market research firm that I spoke to recently called Brightfield Group, and they are convinced that now with federal legalization, hemp-derived CBD, it's going to be a $22 billion industry by 2020. Wow. Sorry, by 2022.
Did you say it's even being added to pet food? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, dog treats. Why not? CBD is used for anxiety treatment, or I'm sorry, that's what it's purported to be effective in treating is anxiety. So people with, you know, really anxious pets will give it to their dogs. I've also heard people use it for older dogs that have arthritis. It's just, you know, kind of part of all of the ways that CBD is being marketed as this this health supplement kind of cure everything under the sun.
Eric, what's your take on this? I mean, do people regard CBD as something of a miracle cure for just about anything that might ail you?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely don't use the word cure. It's just a no-no in the supplement world. But yeah, I mean, it definitely treats a whole bunch of ailments. We have, you know, CBD itself has been shown to reduce inflammation, but there's also a lot of other cannabinoids that have shown to be really effective towards other ailments. But
we really don't have the research to know for sure, do we?
We have some, but it's still nominal. You know, yes. We haven't been able to research it because it's been a Schedule I. And that has, you know, prohibited a lot of the research to be able to go forward. Israel is really ahead of the groundbreaking right now.
Well, you sell this stuff over at Hemp Haws on 39th Street. What's your sense, and what do you think CBD is good for? What do you tell your customers?
You know, we always ask them if they're looking for pain, anxiety, sleep, or maybe the three major things. And then judging on what their ailment is, we kind of curtail what we think would be most effective for them.
How is CBD regarded out in Colorado, Esther?
CBD right now, well, Colorado, we're one of the largest producers of hemp in the country. That's because we legalized it along with marijuana back in 2012.
Right.
And it's what's driving the hemp industry. And that's not just here in Colorado. That's across the country. So I've read reports stating that as much as 70% of hemp grown right now is being used to create CBD.
Hmm.
It is definitely the big product.
Esther, are there really people out there who believe that CBD can cure cancer?
I think that people who grow hemp and who produce products of hemp, they're big champions of this product, and they really believe in it. You know, once hemp was legalized in Colorado, they really jumped on it, and they saw it as an opportunity to do something that they found meaningful. So they're behind it 100% of the way. But as Eric was saying, you know, there's been a bit of research. There's been small clinical trials. There's been animal model studies. And it shows a lot of promise for the effects of CBD, but we just don't have that evidence yet, and we are years off from getting there.
You know, Eric, it strikes me that all this stuff is going on, all these products are being sold, and yet the FDA considers CBD to be a very, you know, a complicated issue here. In a statement from December, the FDA says this: selling unapproved products with unsubstantiated therapeutic claims is a violation of the law. What does that mean exactly to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's been law. That's been supplemental law, which really took off. And with the Asai, everyone was selling Asai. And so a lot of claims were made. So we absolutely stay away from any claim saying that it cures anything. What we're here is just to simply try to give people relief from their ailment in a non-benzo or opiate. So
right.
We work with the research farms to be able to provide that.
So, Eric, how can these products be exploding on the market when the rules and regs around them are so murky?
Well, I mean, people are looking for an alternative. People have used hemp for...
There's a hunger out there for it, clearly.
There absolutely is. I mean, an opiate just simply blocks your pain receptors. We're coming to find out that CBD oil not only is helping block the pain receptors, but it's also reducing the inflammation. It's actually attacking the cause of the discomfort or the pain.
Mm-hmm. Esther, make a distinction for us here between hemp-based CBD and marijuana-based CBD, and tell us why that distinction is so important.
Right. So hemp and marijuana both come from the cannabis plant. Only hemp, basically, it just has a lower THC point. So now by federal law, industrial hemp is defined as having less than 0.3% THC. So like you were saying earlier, hemp-derived CBD does not give you high. It just has the cannabinoids in it that are purported to have all of these health benefits.
Okay.
Marijuana-derived CBD, on the other hand, it's still a Schedule I drug. It still has THC in it. That does give you that effect, that high.
We're talking about CBD and this burgeoning industry, both here in Missouri and Kansas and across the country. If you have a question, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Esther, is it still possible that the FDA is going to shut down this industry, or is that have we passed that point?
We have passed that point. I think now we're just sort of in a gray area. We're trying to understand how to bring this substance that has been illegal for so long into our regulatory system and treat it just like any other substance. So there's still a lot of issues for the FDA to suss out. In their most recent statement, they said we need some time to figure out language, how to go about developing certain processes like selling CBD in food or interstate commerce of CBD products. I think that there are some fears among folks in the hemp industry that CBD could be more heavily restricted or regulated more like a drug. Right now in Colorado, it's regulated as a food ingredient, and that makes it really accessible for producers to be able to do what they want with it and sell it in the ways they want to. Of course, there is a drug right now that uses CBD in it. It's called Epidiolex, and that was approved by the FDA.
Hmm.
So now the FDA is kind of trying to sort through You know, it's an active ingredient in a drug, but it's also put in foods. So how are we going to find a way right. to regulate this appropriately?
So, Eric, give me a bottom line here. I mean, do consumers really know what they're getting, or is this like the wild, wild west out there?
I mean, it really is kind of the wild, wild west out there. It is kind of scary. You know, we do a lot of testing and everything on our own. Anando, which we're a master distributor for, is number one medical research farm in the United States. There's a lot of testing that's done at Thomas Jefferson. And, you know, we found up to 70% of the bottles on the market are mislabeled or don't actually contain what it has inside.
70%?
70%. And wow. So when we saw that, you know, it was kind of being able to find a way to educate the consumer about where to find the right stuff, what is actually real. We get it all the time, people coming in and asking us what's so different about our stuff, and we're attached to the research farms themselves. We mm-hmm. know exactly that our C of A's are matching what's in the bottle. You know, we're made in GMP facilities, and we want to, you know, be the cutting edge of being compliant. And so if someone's not being, you know, completely transparent of their right. source, that's a pretty big red flag right off the bat.
How expensive is this stuff?
I mean, it can range. I mean, you've got your cheaper brands that'll use like an isolate form, which is just like the CBD molecule itself, depending on how they suspend it. So you can go anywhere from $20, $30 a bottle all the way up to a couple $100 a bottle, depending on the strength.
And I'm walking blind here. A bottle would last me, I mean,
you know, typically,
if I'm having a little bit of pain, how long is that going to last me?
Typically, we sell them about 30-day time periods, about a month.
So generally speaking, this isn't like buying a box of aspirin at the pharmacy.
No, it's not buying a box of aspirin or, you know, anything like that. But if you look at how much people are spending on their other medications and you add them all up together, if they're able to get off of some of those, they actually end up in doing some real savings, actually.
And the argument is this is natural stuff. At least that's the theory.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And if you're getting the right stuff, it is natural. And you know, that's what people are really looking for now,
right.
is, you know, the natural, the homeopathic way to heal things. And, you know, we're finding out that it's a lot of compounds working together in an, you know, what we call the entourage effect, mm-hmm. is it's attacking numerous things instead of just the way we look at our medicine now is here's this one pill, this one molecule to attack this, but then you have these other side effects because of it.
The CBD industry, that's our topic. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Mike from Roland Park. Mike, you're on the air.
Wow, you just were talking about the very thing I was concerned about was the pricing.
Mm.
I use CBD oil for my dogs. And
how does it work?
It seems to be working all right. It costs about $65 for a month's supply. My question, though, is why is it seemingly so expensive? I mean, I consider that to be expensive. When, for instance, there are two shops in Mission, Kansas that are selling CBD oil, they sell the exact same brand. And I'm going, that doesn't seem like a competitive thing. I don't think somebody would open up a store two blocks away from another store selling the same thing, except maybe Starbucks. And so I don't understand why the competitiveness of the marketplace hasn't made the pricing more competitive. And it seems to me that there's,
I get it, Mike. Yeah. Esther, do you want to take a run at that?
Yeah. You know, we really haven't been operating on a real competitive market just yet, because remember that hemp was legal at a state level. So you had all of these states that were allowing for the cultivation of hemp, and that really wasn't a lot. We had more than 25,000 acres this last year, but we're set to grow a whole lot more. And when you start growing more, obviously you have a larger supply. Not only that, we were in a gray area before federal legalization. So you had major retailers, major producers, companies that were not interested in getting involved with CBD because they just weren't sure how the feds were going to handle that. Now that that's been cleared up, we're going to start to see some bigger players enter the picture, and that's really going to bring down the prices, I believe, for people.
Eric, you see it the same way? You're nodding your head. Yeah,
Esther is completely right. I mean, there's been a limited supply in the United States. I mean, you know, a lot of companies actually were even importing from over in Europe, and some of them even were importing isolate from China to keep up with demand. But yes, there's a lot larger domestic crop that's being planted this year. It should bring down prices some. And then hopefully we'll get a little bit more regulation and the quality. A lot of the probably the fly-by-night companies are going to have a little bit harder time selling their products on the marketplace because there will be a lot more higher quality products at a more competitive price point.
Dorice from Lenexa, you're on the air, Dorice.
Thanks, Steve. My question is, so, and I missed part of the show at the start, so I hope I didn't miss it, but so hemp oil having less than 0.3 THC, I can understand why that could be sold in the state of Kansas, but I'm confused how places in the state of Kansas can be selling CBD oil. Is that just a misinterpretation or a different interpretation of CBD? How is that sold in Kansas when it's not legal in Kansas?
Eric, how's that working?
Yeah, it actually became legal in July in Kansas. There's an American Hemp Academy run by Joe Bazone, and he actually really helped push through hemp legalization in the state of Kansas. So it is legal in the state of Kansas now.
You know, Eric, you're using some terms that maybe I need to get a better understanding of. CBD isolate, you've mentioned that
yes.
a couple of times. Then there's full spectrum hemp oil. Then there's broad spectrum hemp oil. Are these categories of CBD products? Is that what I'm looking at here?
Yeah, they're categories of CBD products. So like CBD isolate is just that. It is the isolated CBD molecule. The reason why there's so much focus on CBD is it's the most abundant of the 113 different cannabinoids that we know.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have full spectrum hemp oil, which comprises of all 113 cannabinoids. Plus, you're going to have a terpene profile and a flavonoid profile in there as well. All of them work together synergistically to something called the entourage effect. And so when you look at certain things, you know, you're seeing that THCV, which is actually not THC, but that's actually a glucose regulator. You've got cannabichromine, which has been showing to really, you know, that's what people are looking at for tumor sizes and everything. So
I need a chemistry degree.
Yeah,
here,
it's pretty wild how far in depth, you know, like things are going through. Like we really believe that 2019 is going to be the year of the cannabinoid. You're going to see a lot more specialty formulations coming out for ailments. We've been starting to see it on the manufacturing side. And then you have broad spectrum. Broad spectrum is the same as full spectrum with a non-detectable amount of THC. And those are, you know, that's popular in Texas where you have to have a 0.0% THC. A lot of the major companies are looking at about using a broad spectrum just for the navigating from state lines and distribution channels.
Right.
We find having a little bit of THC is better because it opens up the CB1 and CB2 receptor for the cannabinoids to work better with it.
Huh. You know, Esther, just based on the piece you just wrote for Harvest Public Media, I think that suggests that you think 2019 is going to be the year of CBD as well.
Yeah, you know, when I talked to a lot of market researchers about this, and what I found really interesting is CBD right now represents a $600 million market, and that's a pretty modest market size. But you have to remember that there was basically no formal advertising to get to that point because it wasn't allowed. A lot of advertisement companies wouldn't touch it. So just by word of mouth, just for that, you know, people out there wanting some sort of solution that maybe perhaps CBD can offer, it has just grown in popularity. And I've also heard anecdotes of large retail companies that have just been waiting for this to become federally legal so that they can get, you know, get it on their shelves. Coca-Cola has, you know, admitted that they're watching this market because they're looking for something that can be a new sports drink that people will be interested in. So there's a lot of potential, I think.
Margaret from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on Up to Date, Margaret.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. My question is, how does one, I'm a CBD oil fan. I just started it about a month ago for nausea.
How does it work?
Vertigo. I'm a believer because
okay.
I have some vertigo issues, which, you know, that's my cross to bear. But then the nausea was what was really debilitating, and it's really helped. And my doctor, before I started it, I talked to her and she goes, yes, we do see that helping with patients with nausea, but be very careful. Don't get it online. Don't, you know, she wanted me to go somewhere to a store and talk to a person to kind of verify what I was buying. My question for your guests are how do any of us, you know, we get reassurances from the retailer saying, well, this is such and such manufacturer and da da da. How do I verify that?
Great question.
Is there some way to be sure?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way, you know, the first off is asking, you know, the source of it, getting a certificate of analysis, and they should definitely be able to tell you.
A certificate of analysis is attached to the product, or you have to ask for it behind the counter?
You know, it's a large enough to where you can't put it on a label. We always have ours on hand for us. Even the companies we work with,
right,
they post them online. It's all about transparency. If you're not trying to hide something, you should be able to easily give it. It's a standard test you need to have. It's kind of like a builder's permit almost, mm-hmm. if you kind of think. And then the other thing is if you are looking at an isolate, look at the way that it's suspended. Look at the way it's suspended as well. You know, if you're seeing anything like, you know, vegetable oil or, you know, olive oil even or anything like that, that's not going to be a quality product. And then you should be able to see if it's an isolate-based product, pull the dropper out and see if there's actual crystals that are attached to the dropper. If there's crystals attached to the dropper, that means it hasn't been properly suspended. Because it needs to be a total liquid, so you shouldn't see any crystals attached to that dropper at all.
Okay, Margaret, I hope that helps. Jan from North Kansas City, good morning.
Hi. Yeah. I just had a comment that I have a couple of relatives with different issues, and they've both had really good results with CBD oil. The one is a young person, about 23 soon. Anyway, and has anxiety syndrome and has had very good results with sleeping much better and not as sometimes have some kind of bad dream issues. And
right.
So none of those, rest much better and just relaxing, you know, the way a lot of people who like to have a beer or something say it's relaxing, soothing. Well, this person gets that kind of result from CBD oil, and especially with the sleep and the lessening of the anxiety.
Right.
And the other relative is autistic, is a younger, has also had some seizures, although they haven't really said there's epilepsy, but, you know, and when those have happened, the CBD oil has helped a lot, and also for just in general, that sundown syndrome kind of thing.
Jan, I've got to scoot. I appreciate that comment. And Eric, just quickly.
Yeah. So we have definitely seen CBD help with sleep. The reason why is we've seen it increase to stage 4, but it's actually we're seeing more that CBN is really causing that sleep. And that'll be in the full spectrum oil. Hey, thank you so much for having us.
Oh, absolutely.
Today.
Eric Oleksschlager again with Hemp Haws on 39th Street in Kansas City. Esther Honig joined us via Skype. She's a reporter with Harvest Public Media based in Greeley, Colorado. Thank you both for a great conversation. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the assassination plot to kill George Washington. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. On yesterday's show, we talked to the black detective who infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan and the local filmmaker who helped tell his story on the big screen. You can hear my conversation with Ron Stallworth and Kevin Wilmot at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, we'll get one state lawmaker's perspective on why Missouri needs to change the way it does ballot initiatives. I'll ask him if the state GOP is trying to step back several progressive measures that voters passed back in November. Well, it turns out that the colonists during the Revolutionary War weren't all united against the King of England. In fact, a few of them plotted to kill the most indispensable American. That's George Washington. The man who would go on to become our first president heard rumors of the plot and assembled an elite team of soldiers to protect him. He also recruited soldiers to ferret out plots against him as well. The forerunner to the CIA, the Secret Committee of Intestine Enemies, succeeded in rooting out enemies. One of them was Washington's housekeeper. Brad Meltzer tells this story along with Josh Mensch in the new political thriller, The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot Against George Washington. Brad is a producer for the History Channel, among other things. He's in town to speak tonight at Unity Temple on the Plaza, and he's here with us right now. Nice to have you. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I want to talk to you about spies and plots and George Washington, but I wanted to begin by asking about an article you just wrote for USA Today, Brad, that chronicled a volunteer duty you just undertook, reading to a dying George H.W. Bush in his home in Maine. This was just fascinating to me. How did this come about?
Yeah, I had done a lot of work for literacy with President Bush and Mrs. Bush. President Bush wrote me a fan letter a decade ago. President Clinton wrote me a fan letter. I thought they were honestly fake when I first got them. And had started doing literacy work with the Bushes. Barbara Bush believed that you should teach everyone to read, not just kids, but adults. And what teach them when they're immigrants, teach them if they can't speak English. That's how you unlock the American dream. And I love that idea.
So you wound up going to the Bush house then to
honor her,
the
right? And so they said to me that they were bringing in President Bush's favorite authors to come and read to him. And I said I'd be honored to do it, of course. And when I got into his office, it was myself and my wife, President Bush, and his service dog, Sully. And we know this is the end. I know what's coming. On his desk is a stack of about 5-6 books. One of them is our book, The First Conspiracy, The Plot.
And it was clear he had spent some time
book. He and President Clinton both gave me blurbs on the book, and I had sent it to him almost a year ago. But it was so beaten up, like it was read over and over again. And I said to him, "Sir, you want to read from this?" And at this point, he can really only say, mm-hmm, and he can nod. And they tell me he's only going to listen for about 10 minutes. He's going to fall asleep. That's what's happening these days. He's sleeping a lot. And so I take one of my favorite passages from the book where George Washington makes sure that the Declaration of Independence is read to the troops for the first time. And I get to those words.
And this is amazing because right? he seemed to have been sleeping at that point.
He falls asleep, and I get to the magic words, and I read to him, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." And in that moment, George Bush's eyes pop open. Mm. And I know when my mom died, you know, anytime you're on a deathbed, there's a moment where the person's eyes opened up and they're just pure clarity. You know they're back. And my dad, when he passed away, same thing. President Bush locks on me as if the words from the Declaration of Independence are his own lifeblood. It's the ultimate IV to a president. Mm. I get to the end of the chapter and I say, "You want to read another?" And he's like, "Mm-hmm." And another chapter, mm-hmm. We get to another, mm-hmm. Instead of 10 minutes, I'm there for an hour. And when he finally died, I was at the funeral, and all the tributes mentioned over and over, the word that I saw mentioned than anything else was this one word, decency.
Mm-hmm.
Decency. And I know it's because he was a decent man, but I also think it's because right now, as a culture, we're starving for decency from our leaders. And this book is, yes, I know it's titillating to say it's about the secret plot to kill George Washington, but it's also about what it takes to be a real leader and how you have to bring us together, not tear us apart to do it.
You know, I'm just struck by this scene that you've described, you and your wife and the dog and a dying president in his office overlooking the ocean in Maine, reading quietly in that moment.
I'm sitting there and reading about the first president to, at that moment, the oldest living president, you know, and this is it. This is the end, right? He's got a view of the ocean. He's got a rocking chair with the presidential seal. And my wife and I left there. We were so humble, but we really looked at each other like, did that just happen?
That just happened, sure.
Because absolutely. It was such a magical moment.
Well, let's turn to your book, The First Conspiracy. And why had I never heard of the plot to kill George Washington before? How did that elude me all these years?
Yeah, you know, I asked the same thing. I found the story in a footnote nearly a decade ago.
In a footnote?
And which is where all the great secrets hide, right? Yes. You have to understand. And I thought, a secret plot to kill George Washington? Is this real? Is it fake? Is it nonsense? What is it? And it was real. In 1776, there was a plot to kill George Washington. When George Washington found out about it, he gathered up those responsible, built a gallows, took one of the main co-conspirators and hanged him in front of 20,000 people, one of the largest public executions at that point in North American history. George Washington brings the hammer down. It's like, do not mess with me. I'm George Washington. I'm going to be on the money one day, right? I mean, he's just, that's it. But the reason you've never heard of it is I asked that very question to Joseph Ellis, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author. I went to him immediately.
He's been here, yeah.
And I said to him, I'm thinking about writing my first ever nonfiction book about this plot. You know the plot? And he says, yeah, I know the plot. He said to me, but you have to understand, Brad, that this is a story about George Washington's spies. You can find every single slave and how many slaves George Washington owned. You'll never find all his spies. By its nature, what you're searching for is going to forever be elusive. Mm. And if you look at the day of the hanging, it was June 28th, 1776. Guess what was happening in America on June 28th, 1776, right? The British are literally coming. The first draft of the Declaration of Independence is handed in. With headlines like that, even something as big as a hanging, it just becomes a footnote to history. And we just took the time to kind of dig it out again.
So it was a Herculean struggle to get this story together.
Yeah. You know, when we started, I wrote it with my friend Josh Mensch, who worked on our History Channel TV show. He's an award-winning documentarian. And we knew it was going to be hard to find the details because George Washington, you know, he's the most recognized American probably who ever lived. He's on the money. We see him on the money every day.
Right.
But we oddly know the least about him. And he's not like Jefferson or John Adams where he writes flowery letters saying his every feeling to everyone. He doesn't do that. He plays his cards close to the chest. So even on that day of the hanging, he barely writes anything in his diary. I mean, if I killed someone in front of 20,000 people, I'd say, "Dear diary, had a rough day today," right? George Washington is almost nothing. And what cracked it open for us is we were able to find when George Washington was searching for it, he started, as you said, a secret committee. It's called the Committee on Conspiracies. He put John Jay, who later became the first Supreme Court Justice. Exactly, yeah. In charge of it. And John Jay goes, knocks on doors in the middle of the night, takes out suspects, interrogates them. And what he's really doing in the process is he's building America's first counterintelligence agency. In fact, to this day, people will tell you, oh, the precursor to the CIA is the OSS, but it's not. It all dates right back here to John Jay. In fact, in CIA headquarters right now, there's a room dedicated to John Jay that says, in honor of the founding father of counterintelligence.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, people think of America back then, and you think of a country, you know, totally united against the King of England. That wasn't the case.
Yeah, no. We are obviously a divided country today. And we love to tell the story that we were united, we believed in democracy, we held hands, we beat the British. It's a great story. It's not the real story.
Mm-hmm.
The real story is far more complex. In 1776 in New York City, there were nearly as many loyalists on the British side as there were patriots on the American side.
How can that be?
Because you have to remember, we were under British rule and people didn't want a change. You know, and David McCullough says, and I have to fully agree with him, he says, according to his math, and I support this as well, 30% of Americans at the time wanted to leave and get rid of the king. Another 30% were like, they didn't know. They were like, you know what, let's make a better deal. We'll get better taxes. We'll pay what we think with our pocketbooks. And then a third in the middle just didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same in our own military. In our own military, you had, you know, there's a scene in the first conspiracy that I love. It's you see George Washington's troops, the different regiments meeting each other for sometimes the first time. And the Massachusetts regiment meets the Virginia regiment. The Virginia regiment has a different uniform. We all had different uniforms. Mm-hmm. We're not, you know, some people are showing up in work shirts.
Right.
And they have frillier things on their uniform. The Massachusetts guys mouth off. A huge fight breaks out. And they're fighting each other. Our own military, George Washington races in on his horse, leaps off the horse, grabs two of the guys by the throat, shaking them, and basically saying, stop fighting with each other. We're on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
If ever there were a metaphor for where we are today, that's it.
Brad Meltzer will be speaking about this country's first conspiracy at 7 tonight at Unity Temple on the Plaza. For more information on how to get a ticket, go to rainydaybooks.com or call the bookstore at 913-384-3126. You know, this really struck me. Two of the key conspirators here are New York Governor William Tryon and the city's mayor, David Matthews. I mean, these are top-level people. Why were they working against George Washington?
Yeah, they were the governor and the mayor under British rule. And, of course, when we didn't want British rule, we said we no longer need your services, Mr. Governor, Mr. Mayor. Guess what they want?
Yeah.
They want their power back.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do, and this is the part that blew my mind, is back then George Washington had his own private bodyguards. And he went to his top regiments and said, give me your four best men. From those four best, he picked about 50. Personally, Washington picked 50 of what became, they called them the General's Guard, they called them the Commander's Guard, but the name that stuck with them was the Lifeguards,
yes,
because they guarded George Washington's life,
among
other things.
The first Secret Service, right?
It really was. It's the first draft of the Secret Service, and these Lifeguards are the ones who turn on him. They're the ones who are involved in the plot to kill Washington. The governor and mayor of New York pay these guys and basically say, how'd you like some money, and how'd you like to join our team? Mm. And back then, again, it wasn't, you know, now we know it's a foregone conclusion. We won. It wasn't back then in any way. In fact, mm-hmm, in the Battle of Brooklyn, one of the first great battles of the war, everyone, you know, we think we, the ragtag group came together and we beat the British. No, we got our butts kicked in the Battle of Brooklyn.
And we snuck off the island in the middle of the night.
And George Washington was out-generaled. He doesn't have the experience of the generals, and that's exactly what happens. He has to plan a daring escape. But in that, when he sneaks out and escapes, here's the key moment, is George Washington won't get on any of the escape boats until he sees that his men get aboard first.
He waits until the end.
To the lowest guy gets on board, and he risks his life to save his men. And there was no United States back then.
Mm-hmm.
George Washington had to help build it by putting his arms around this chaos and pulling us together.
So ultimately, what do we know about what was the plot?
Yeah, so of course the plot's foiled, so we never see it come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a really big spoiler there. But what we know is this. The plot was that when the British invaded and came to New York in 1776, they were going to blow up our bridges. The signal was going to be given, and all those who were secretly working for the British were going to switch sides, and many were in our own military. They were going to, as I said, blow up bridges, steal our cannons. Some argue that they were going to kill George Washington right there and assassinate him. Others say they were going to kidnap him. And here's the key thing that we found out is that it used to be when you kidnap lower-level guys in the military, it becomes a prisoner exchange. We say, you give us ours, we'll give you yours.
Mm-hmm.
At George Washington's level, there was no prisoner exchange. Mm-hmm. You basically got hanged. So either way, George Washington's life is in danger. And luckily for John Jay and everyone else, we get to see what happens. And for us, what cracked it open was we found the transcripts of the secret tribunal where they tried the person who got hanged.
Oh, really?
Where was that? It was in the New York Provincial Congress in their records, because it wasn't an open trial. It was a secret tribunal. And what they did was they still swore in witnesses. You had to, you know, testify against this guy. They voted in no time at all. It was a pretty quick and, you know, the ultimate quick and speedy trial. They hanged them pretty quickly. But we had a record. Right. Instead, we didn't have George Washington's notes on the matter, but we did have an actual record with a transcript. They wrote it all down.
Hmm.
And once Josh and I had that, we knew that there was far more to report on.
What would have happened if George Washington had been assassinated?
You know, could we have won? Maybe. Could we have had a president? Maybe. But I personally believe that George Washington's greatest accomplishment is not victory in the Revolutionary War, or even being the first president. It's that at the end of the war, he could have been the king. He was so popular, they would have easily made him the king. And at the time, King George says, what's George Washington going to do after the war now that he's won? And the painter Benjamin West reportedly said, he's going home. And King George said, if he does that, he'll be the greatest man who ever lived. And that's exactly what George Washington does. And he does it again after his second term. He could have had a third term or a fourth, but instead he chooses to have faith in us and faith in our country.
How did he learn about this plot? And what did he hear? Or what do you know about
that? Yeah, well, the things we know. So it was John Jay and the Committee on Conspiracies. The great thing is the plot is never, it's not cracked by George Washington. It's not even cracked by John Jay. The reason we find out about the plot, and this part I don't want to ruin, but because it's such a great twist in the book, is an ordinary guy sitting in a crazy place that no one would ever think of as eavesdropping, and overhears a conversation that basically changes the course of history if he doesn't hear it. And I love that's how history works.
Mm-hmm.
That it's this thing you can't predict, and it's moving like Mercury itself. It goes in all directions, and George Washington gets his life saved by someone you will never, ever think of who it's going to be. And that, to me, is the best part of it.
The book, again, The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot Against George Washington. Brad Meltzer will be speaking again tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. For more information and to get a ticket, go to rainydaybooks.com. Brad, fascinating story. Thanks for sharing it with us. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Coming up, Brian McTavish in your weekend to-do list. This sounds like the theme music before a big football game. Brian McTavish is here to talk about some cool stuff to do on your weekend. Welcome back. How are you?
How big is the AFC Championship game?
How big is it?
At Sunday at 5:40.
Speaking like a guy who gave up his season tickets a couple years back.
I did.
Yes.
Because I was going in my head.
Yes.
I was going in my head. I mean, I knew exactly what was going to happen aside from the score. I always assumed we'd win, so why drop that extra few grand? Anyway, Kansas City Chiefs versus New England Patriots, Sunday night, Arrowhead Stadium. Who's
going
to win? No.
Not going.
Well, I mean, it depends on how. It's going to be chilly.
Oh, it's going to be chilly.
I mean, what?
Although it's going to be warmer than we thought based on what Kyle Palmer
low
was saying earlier.
Low 20s, but with the wind chill. Plus, it's a night game.
Yeah.
But I think I know what's going to happen, okay? I'll just let the cat out of the bag. We're going to win.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Now, I will give a prediction. Are you ready? Hold on to your hat. I know this is going to shock you. The Chiefs are going to get up early on the Pats, and they're going to stay there. It could be a blowout with the Chiefs running away with the game, which is what I always say, Steve, and which goes against most predictions for this game, which should be tight. But even if I'm wrong, okay, here's the thing. I still see the Chiefs winning because we've got quarterback Patrick Mahomes, and the Patriots have some guy, what's his name?
It doesn't matter.
I think it's
Tom something.
Anyway, so even in a close game, we should be fine as long as we have the ball at the end. Do not give that guy named Tom something the ball at the end because you'll probably think he has to prove something and make a name for himself.
Astute football analysis from Brian McTavish.
Yeah.
The big game, 5:40 in the afternoon Sunday. We'll talk about it more on tomorrow's Up to Date.
It's going to be good.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words.
Boy, that's fun to listen to, isn't it? That's just nice.
He's
that's
the best.
Just nice.
The best.
Yes.
He's always there.
Yeah.
He's always ready.
That's right.
Just drop that needle, baby.
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. Why are we singing about the moon? Well, it's the night at the Arboretum.
Mm.
It's a lunar eclipse, which you can see from anywhere, I guess, but at the Overland Park Arboretum and Botanical Gardens from 7 to midnight on Sunday, don't go Saturday, you'll be disappointed. It's the year's only total lunar eclipse, but it's going to be a special one. It's going to be, some people are calling it a super wolf blood moon, or
that's
super
what you hear.
Blood wolf moon or something like that.
And it'll be out right after the Chiefs game.
Well, let me see if I
right
have
right after
this.
We win.
Yes, and actually,
Sunday night.
You know, January is known as the Wolf Month for some reason, right? And if you recall the Wolf Pack,
yes,
does that still exist? Maybe not.
I don't know.
But that was the old Chiefs fan club, right? So get this: the moon's going to turn deep red late Sunday night. It's the month of the wolf, right?
It's the month the Chiefs win the AFC Championship for the first time at Arrowhead Stadium.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. And so enjoy the moon, enjoy the Chiefs victory. How did we get back on the Chiefs?
Be sure to see Brian's 6 fun things to do in Kansas City this weekend. You'll find it at kcur.org.
The hills are alive with the sound of music, with songs they have sung.
That's nice to listen to, too.
At least 1,000 years, the hills have been alive with the sound of music.
Yeah.
Now, it didn't debut on Broadway until 1959.
Right.
And I think it was the 1965-ish movie version is still touted as the most successful movie musical in history, I guess in 1965-ish dollars anyway. You can see it this weekend, and you should.
Really?
Yes. The nationally touring stage revival of the classic Rodgers and Hammerstein musical. You can see it at 7:30 tonight or Friday or 2 and 7:30 Saturday or, gosh, 1 and 6:30 Sunday, except you'll be thinking about the Chiefs and maybe at the game and can't. Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Okay, check it out. You got this song. You got Do Re Mi. You got 16 Going on 17. My Favorite Things. The Lonely Goat Herd. I know you like that one. And Climb Every Mountain. And those are just the songs from the first act.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
So join the young nun who must look after a family caught in the crosshairs of the Nazi invasion. Sounds scary. Kind of is, but everything turns out okay.
That's really amazing. All those songs, that's just the first act.
Yeah, yeah, they make you wait till the second act, almost till the end of the thing to hear Edelweiss, right?
Yeah.
It's worth the wait.
Okay.
I definitely think you should go.
Remember those walls I built? Baby, they tumbled them down. Didn't even put up a fight. Didn't even make a sound. Found a way to let you in. I never really had a doubt. Standing in the light of your halo, I got my angel now.
You're just full of good music this week.
One after the
terrific.
Other.
Just terrific.
I hope we can hold it up.
Who is that?
Okay, you know what? I don't know who it is.
Yeah.
So I think I've fallen down on you there.
Crystal.
Well, not exactly. Here's the story. Okay. This is a song you will hear during Cirque du Soleil's latest extravaganza with aerialists and acrobats. It's called Crystal, and that's the name of the female protagonist who she's going to skate at the Sprint Center all weekend. But Cirque du Soleil, it's the very first time they've combined this aerial action and the acrobatics and all this circus stuff with skating, with ice skating. What took them so long? I have no idea.
Who knows?
And this is the same group, Cirque du Soleil, who they've had these super creative circus-style shows, many, many, many of them, including tributes to the Beatles, Michael Jackson, burlesque cabaret, mythology. They've even transported audiences to the ocean and even the insect world. But now they enter the realm of what I would sort of call... a Disney-esque ice show. But I'm sure it's even more exciting than that.
Okay.
All weekend long at the Sprint Center.
And finally today. What do we have here?
We have a kid thing to do.
Kid thing.
And especially if you're not a kid, this is a kid thing to do. Check it out. It's called Improvisation... Be a Kid Again by doing make-believe. You can take part in improv games, which will be purposely immersed in the world of fantasy from 1 to 3 Saturday at the Antioch branch of the Johnson County Library. Basically, Steve, when you were a kid and it was too cold to go outside, or at least some grown-up claimed it was, you had to make fun inside, right?
Mm.
You had to use your imagination. So here's improv comedy games and so forth and so on. Maybe Little Red Riding Hood will meet the Hobbit at the Antioch branch of the Johnson County Library. Everyone is welcome, including actual kids. I say, look to the children and look to the Chiefs' victory on Sunday night.
There you go. That's Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
You can find and follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR. Up to date, you can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to like, if you would please, KCUR on Facebook. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Devin Davis, and Liz Ruiz. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.